are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
No, and I said at the middle of last year when everybody was shitting their pants about Rodgers that I would buy him every single day of the week.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Is Aaron Rodgers done? You know, he always has had injury issues and blah, 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 blah. He's always been a psycho, you know, conceited guy that only cares about himself. He hates his family. What about his brother? What's he doing nowadays?
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Merrick Mackey last year predicted that Russell Wilson would have a down year because he was getting married and was finally going to lose his virginity and would lose all that fire.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Football Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst, friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. How was vacation?
Good. I'm still a little foggy. You know, I'm not really ready to, you know, head back to life. It's good. It's nice to kind of disappear and unplug for a little while.
Yeah, none of us are ready to head back to life. I know you don't watch Game of Thrones, but I'm still recovering from last night's episode, and it's been pretty crazy. And let's be honest, you always kind of mess up the football introduction because you're always used to doing like 50 million baseball podcasts, mm-hmm. So I don't think it was due to the vacation.
No, it definitely has more to do with the fact that I'm just an idiot. today we are going to cover the NFC North. You know, winter is coming. Right?
It is.
That's a Game of Thrones reference, right?
That is definitely a thing. Yep.
All right, cool. Yeah, I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I don't have HBO. I'm too busy watching baseball and football all year round to care too much about something like Game of Thrones.
First, Game of Thrones probably trumps definitely baseball fans.
No, that's just not
true. I'm just being honest here. I'm not trying to be a dick about it. Like, there are more people watching Game of Thrones than watching probably all baseball games at any one time on Sunday night. Probably close in football too, not gonna lie.
Well, that just seems silly. I mean, I'm so football addicted though that I actually put some money in on a DraftKings CFL.
What?
DFS.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And if you
it's that dark? It got that dark?
Well, it was someone alerted to me to the fact that there was a everyone wins tournament on DraftKings, so it was a free entry, free roll, and everybody gets at least a dollar. So I was like, "Yeah, I'll try this shit out." You know, and if you're in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Facebook group, I threw it in there. So that way people could sign up and at least get a free dollar. And there's one more game tonight. I think it's Edmonton versus Winnipeg. If the Edmonton defense can hold strong, I might make a couple bucks there. So that'll be nice. So you can check that out on the discussion group on Facebook. I believe it's Facebook.com/ Friends of Fantasy Benefits. We do a lot of discussing of baseball, football, basketball, other sports that are going on. You can give us a rate review on iTunes. It really helps us out, especially if it's the 5-star variety. And if it is of the 5-star variety, that'll get you entered in to win some pretty cool swag, including T-shirts, mugs, stuff like that. We'll be giving away all season long. So definitely do that. You can follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Warner FWFB. And you can follow me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. And now that we have covered all kind of the business stuff, let's talk some football. Let's talk some NFC North. And we're going to start with the Chicago Bears, who I kind of, you know, we were talking a little bit before we hit the record button, and I was joking that the Chicago Bears are a fucking mess.
They're beyond a mess. I honestly feel bad for Mike Glennon, because former Buccaneer, you know, shout out to him. But, you know, not even from a fantasy perspective, just from an overall NFL perspective, you get signed over to the Bears, and then almost immediately after, you pretty much are assured that you're going to get a year at least of being a starter and get a legitimate shot. Mitch Trubisky gets drafted, and now we are kind of left in limbo. If I'm being honest with myself, I would say Glennon probably starts the majority of the season, or at least three quarters of it. I don't think that that Trubisky is going to, you know, really have any type of big role for fantasy and for the NFL this year or anything like that. But it still is kind of a dick move for Glennon. And I mean, you're talking about the Bears from an overall sense. Yeah, they're probably in the running for what, bottom three pick or top three pick. I'm sorry, like bottom three team overall.
Yeah, I don't think there is a worse overall team than the Bears. I mean, honestly, you know, Cleveland will, you know, probably be in the running, but I think they've made some.
They'll improve.
I think they've made some interesting improvements. The Niners are going to be a pretty bad team, but I think they've got enough talent and are in a weak enough division that that they should win enough games to probably not be the worst team in the NFL. To me, the Bears are the worst team in the NFL, and I mean, this quarterback situation makes absolutely, like, well, why do you make a deal like Mike Glennon's to then just go and take Trubisky with your first pick? It just, to me, didn't make any sense, especially when you have so many holes all over that team. Just take the best player available, and to me, Trubisky was not the best player available at that spot.
I agree. My favorite player on this team is Leonard Floyd. I love the guy. I loved a lot of what I saw from him last year. I felt like he took a big step forward. I think that he might be in the running to make a case to be like a top tier, you know, fantasy defensive lineman or outside linebacker, whichever way you want to put it with him. But other than that, like, everybody's kind of going at value for this team. I mean, we can go through just and dissect certain positions and such, but I think it's kind of straightforward.
I want to ask you, I mean, because at running back, you know, you have Jordan Howard. I mean, Langford's still on the team. Cunningham's still being, but we're pretty well assured that Howard is the guy as long as he's healthy. Where do you see him, or where does he deserve to go? Because I've been seeing him go in the first round in standard drafts, and I'm a little worried that that's a little bit overrating him.
Oh, it's definitely too high, in my opinion. I can't feel comfortable about drafting a running back in the first round that I feel the game script will dictate him not getting the ball in the fourth quarter. And yes, what he did last year was admirable. I think you and I both were really high on the Jordan Howard train coming into the season. I know that you and I tussled for him in a lot of drafts that we did together and such. But at the end of the day, like, I just can't feel comfortable about drafting him when I know for a fact he's not going to be in the right game scripts. And I mean, he had multiple 100-yard games. He did great last year. I just can't feel comfortable with it. So first round, no. If it was like more the fourth, fifth round, then yeah, I'd be all over it because he, I think, is going to get the lion's share of the work in the backfield. But to me, first round is just way too much.
Yeah, he's currently going off the board 18th overall, according to Fantasy Pros. But if you look at like FFC or Fantrax, he's going 15th overall. NFL.com's got him going 14th overall. You know, and so depending on the depth of your league, that's virtually at the turn, you know, if you're in a 14-team league, which is typically what I play in. I can't imagine that he gives back that kind of value. I think that the Bears are going to find themselves looking at 8-man boxes a lot of the time, and they're just going to force Mike Glennon to throw because, you know, as much as I think some of us, you know, may think that Glennon actually has some talent, he's largely unproven as a starting quarterback in the NFL. And so if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm stacking that box and I'm making Mike Glennon prove it with this kind of ragtag group of wide receivers. Is there any of these wide receivers that you're interested in?
Cameron Meredith. I continue to have a bit of an infatuation with him. Kevin White, he's going to be the guy for me that is going to have to prove it. So I, as much as I am tantalized by Kevin White and I kind of fell into the trap of him the last couple of years, I'm foregoing any shares of him because I just can't feel comfortable with him staying on the field. It just hasn't been something that's been consistent. And I know him and Tyler Lockett have kind of gone through the same thing. So that kind of worries me about Lockett for the future. But at least for now, I'm out on White. I definitely am involved with Cameron Meredith because who else are they going to throw to? Meredith showed some flashes. He was just a really nice flyer for being a sixth round pick, and he showed some real promise last year. I think that he's the type of guy that can probably be a solid wide receiver 2-3 type this year, just based on target share alone. He has to be getting a floor of 5 to 6 targets a game, especially if I think Jordan Howard is going to lose carries in the fourth quarter because of game script. I surely think that Cameron Meredith will probably reap the rewards of that. So Meredith's my guy.
Yeah, I think if I'm taking anybody, it's Meredith. I mean, I've been a huge Kendall Wright apologist in the past. But and I still will be. Like, he will end up on a team of mine, like, in a really deep format. But I probably will wait to see what Kevin White looks like coming off of these injuries, if he's going to be healthy. I mean, we have no idea what Kevin White is because he's never really played at the NFL level yet, even though this is his third year in the league. So I loved Kevin White coming out of college. I really had high hopes for him. But you're right. We got to wait, kind of see until we until he's, you know, and until he proves otherwise. And right now he's going just a little bit too high in drafts for me. Going in, I believe he's going in like the area of, let's see, a Breshad Perriman. I think I'd rather have Perriman, even though I've never been a Perriman guy. Josh Doctson, my boy, definitely taking him. Guys like, I don't know. Would you? Here's an interesting question. Going right next to each other, according to Fantasy Pros ADP, Laquon Treadwell or Kevin White. And we'll talk about Treadwell a little bit later.
Treadwell. I love Treadwell. I'm infatuated with the guy. He obviously had a significant injury last year at Auburn. But in general, I think last year was just more or less a practice year for him. He still needed to learn the route tree and get more precise on his routes. But I think upside-wise, Kevin White long-term probably has a little bit of an advantage. But Treadwell, I think, is more ready now to be a red zone weapon. He's going to be on a contending team. He has had nothing but glowing reviews in the offseason. Treadwell's the guy.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right. Anybody else you want? I mean, Zach Miller, interested in him at all?
Not really. I'm pretty much not in on this Bears offense. I did a draft the other night for the Fighting Chance fantasy team. We did a mock draft. It was 12 people, and not a lot of Bears were taken. I know it was a 12-team league, and it's pretty shallow, but Cameron Meredith and Jordan Howard were pretty much the only guys that were taken in this draft, and it pretty much makes sense. So
I'm going to go to bat for Miller. If Miller is healthy, I think he is going to be a low-end tight end one.
He could be, but that's the biggest thing, the healthy thing.
Yeah, this is a team. But, I mean, like, you know, if you're in a 12-team or a 14-team league and you miss out on, you know, the top four or five, six tight ends, you might as well just wait, right?
Yeah, I mean, but the problem with that is you have Julius Thomas going 20th among tight ends, who I would take a shot on. Kobe Fleener is in a really good role as well. You could also go Dwayne Allen, because New England obviously loves to run two tight end sets more than 60% of the time. Austin Hooper is somebody that Eli and I in the last show kind of talked about. He's going 18th among tight ends. I can see him being a top 10 option. Like, there's just a lot of guys later on that you can just wait on. And, yes, Zach Miller is among that group, so I don't really mind it. I feel like it's – I just don't want any part of that Bears off more than I have to chew, really.
All right. I think that's fair. Let's move on. Let's move on to the Lions. I mean, there's no real question about, you know, who the quarterback is there. It's still Matthew Stafford. He says he wants to end his career in Detroit. But is he kind of a underrated commodity in fantasy?
I don't think he's underrated. I think he – is pretty much at the point where we know what we're going to get out of him. He's the type of guy that's going to remain a consistent quarterback two to quarterback one every week. I think the fact that he has stayed relatively healthy over the last few years is really good for his long-term prognosis. But the Lions in general are more balanced than the back in the days of Megatron. And with the group of wide receivers that they have nowadays, I don't think you can really expect more than what you've seen the last few years from Stafford. He really kind of plummeted after week seven last season, and I can kind of see what he did from week seven on being the same as what he does this year. So I'm not disliking Stafford. I think that he's a fine quarterback two option, but I would feel really uneasy if he was my only quarterback in a single quarterback league. I would prefer just a little bit more upside, and based on the receivers they have, the scheme that they run, I'm more in favor of getting a guy with a little bit higher chance of fulfilling upside.
I think that's fair, and I'm probably with you. You and I both ranked him 18th among starting quarterbacks, so I think I agree with you. He's kind of a mid-level QB2. What about you mentioned the wide receiver core. Marvin Jones started off the year really hot and then completely disappeared for the most part. Golden Tate has seemingly, you know, become the guy in Detroit. Where do you have Golden Tate ranked?
Well, I haven't done ranks yet, so I don't have him ranked anywhere.
Interesting.
But Golden Tate is obviously a stud PPR option, 90 plus receptions in each of the last 3 years. I think it's safe to say that he will be used as a safety blanket in this offense. That's the way he was used last year. Marvin Jones, though, is still really interesting to me based on what he did at the beginning of last season. Then he had a few nagging injuries and we saw him tail off, which has always been the case in Marvin Jones, right? Just spikes in production and then he gets injured and then we don't see anything from him for the remainder of whatever season it is. But I mean, where he's going right now outside the top 150 picks, so essentially what, a 14th rounder somewhere in there outside the top 50 receivers, that presents a lot of value to me, where a guy like Marvin Jones had multiple weeks where he was a wide receiver one up at the beginning of the season. You could get a guy like that again this year who maybe just, you know, in the 10th percentile chance stays healthy for more than five games, and you're looking at a really, really good fantasy commodity. Golden Tate, I like. I don't love for this year because I think we already know what we're going to get out of him. He's more suited for PPR formats, but Tate has been consistent. I don't think that you can really ask for anything else. Right now, he's a top 25 receiver in fantasy when you average it all together ADP-wise, which is fine, but I still think that there's better options in terms of upside around him. I love Stephon Diggs this year. Obviously, Jameson Crowder, you and I are completely on the bandwagon there, so there's multiple options around that part, but Marvin Jones is going at a very, very good price, and I'm willing to go that route in terms of value because I think that the upside is sky high.
What about Kenny Golladay? I don't really know much about him, but
I don't either. To be completely frank, I would just be, you know, going off of stuff that I'd be reading. So I don't want to make a firm stance until I see him.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm right there with you. And I think your point about them being a much more balanced team than they've been in the past kind of spells that maybe a third receiver won't be super efficient in this offense in the way it might have been.
I don't think it will be.
Yeah, it might have been in years past. So let's see how he looks in kind of the first preseason games, and then we can make some determinations there. Out of the running backs, I mean, Amir Abdullah, the guy to own in standard, Theo Riddick, the guy to own in PPR?
Yeah, I'm all in on Amir Abdullah this year.
And oh, really? Okay.
I know it's irrational, and I really do, but based on where he's going, I can't stop grabbing him because Theo Riddick, he is born to be a third down running back. And yes, he had an expanded role last year and he had some marvelous weeks, but Amir Abdullah is their guy. All of the offseason talk in Detroit has been nothing but awesome for him. I think that they want to use him in a way bigger role than they used Riddick last year. And they want to give, obviously Riddick is going to continue to get his, you know, 3 to 4 targets a game and stuff like that. But in terms of upside alone, Abdullah has the chance to get 20 plus touches a game. And that kind of is consistent with what I'm saying about this Detroit offense overall. I think that they're going to become way more balanced than we have seen in the past. And Abdullah is going to be the main benefactor of that. And where he's going right now is part of the reason that I'm so excited about him. Yes, he's going around LeGarrette Blount and Mike Gillisley, which shows me that everyone is kind of on board as well. But if you're willing to go that route, and, you know, obviously it's a massive risk based on his injury history, I think that he can really prove to be – he can end up being a running back one this year if things played out right, and I firmly believe that.
Yeah, I mean, given his injury history, he's not like a huge dude either. No. And the fact that, last year was such a small sample, you know, you're not going to really draw many conclusions from it. But, I mean, this was a guy who struggled with fumbles in his rookie year. So I'm not on the Amir Abdullah bandwagon.
You never have been.
No, and I have. Well, and I was right his first year. I mean, I hate to say I was right his second year because he didn't really get to play very much.
Well, he was good when he was on the field, but yeah.
It was a game and a half. Like, you can't, like, really draw
it. It was still a game and a half.
Against a really, really bad defense in Indianapolis in the first game, and then Tennessee before, you know, he was injured in the second game, you know, and he had 6 carries. So, I mean, it's not like you're drawing anything from that. I want to see him in preseason, you know, before I, you know, move him up or down. Currently, I think I've got him. I'm probably the lowest on him. Oh, I'm not actually the lowest on him. Oh, Eli's lower. Eli's always negative though. So I have him 27th among my running backs. But for, you know, for comparison, I've got him like in the Bilal Powell neighborhood, Robert Kelly. So I mean I guess that's decent praise, but I'm not a Amir Abdullah buyer unless he shows me something in preseason. He will probably not end up on any of my teams.
He went 81st in the mock draft that I just finished, just to put it in perspective.
Yeah, I don't think I'm doing that. All right, anything else on the Lions you want to talk about before we move over to the Green Bay Packers?
Eric Ebron, I'm willing to take a shot once again this year.
You're going back to that well?
I'm going back to the well of beating my head into my computer desk every single day of the week because
I'm done with Eric Ebron.
He's either questionable or drops wide open, passes in the end zone, or whatever. My main problem with Ebron is that he wasn't a massive red zone presence last year. It mainly was Golden Tate. It mainly was Zach Zenner or, you know, even Dwayne Washington. As much as I really like him, he was used in the, you know, red zone area the majority of the time as well. There's just everyone and their mom was used over Eric Ebron in the red zone. So that is a massive problem. But at the same time, Ebron still possesses a ton of upside. I think that he could be that third receiver here. And Golden Tate doesn't have the best injury history. So if something were to happen to Golden Tate, I think that that would spell amazing, you know, value for Eric Ebron. At the same time, Ebron, obviously not the most durable of guys as well. So,
all right. I'm so done with the inconsistency, with the lack of living up. This is the year he breaks out, though, because I'm saying all this.
He's going behind O.J. Howard, which I find ridiculous. If you're taking O.J. Howard ahead of Eric Ebron, I don't know what you're doing.
Here's my thing with that. It's, you know, like I said before, there's like probably 6, 7, maybe 8 guys, you know, 9 guys maybe, that I really go, okay, these are guys I like with as my tight end one. And then there's everybody else. So I don't really care if you're taking, O.J. Howard over him, or you're taking Austin Hooper over him, or you're taking Colby Fleener over. Like, these are all just guys. They're going to have good weeks. They're going to have bad weeks. And at the end of the day, like, if I'm not getting a guy I really love somewhere, I'm waiting till my third to last pick right before I pick my team defense and my kicker.
I hear you.
All right, let's move on over to the Green Bay Packers. I don't think there's anything to talk about with Aaron Rodgers, do you? I mean, he's the number one quarterback, right?
No, and I said at the middle of last year when everybody was shitting their pants about Rodgers that I would buy him every single day of the week. From that stretch on, he was the best quarterback in fantasy, like he always is. There's probably going to be another 3-game stretch this year where people are like, is Aaron Rodgers done? You know, he always has had injury issues and blah, 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 blah. He's always been a psycho, you know, conceited guy that only cares about himself. He hates his family. What about his brother? What's he doing nowadays? I mean, that's the ramble that will go on. So at the end of the day, no, there isn't anything to talk about with Aaron Rodgers that's relevant to fantasy that we haven't heard before.
Really? You don't think this will, you know, aren't him and Olivia Munn breaking up? Will this change the outlook for fantasy?
I have no idea. I kind of, you know, what's funny is for baseball, you know, Justin Verlander and Kate Upton are together. And for some reason, I always think that Aaron Rodgers is kind of like Verlander in multiple ways, even though they're nothing alike and they play different sports and they don't really look alike either. I just, it's weird. I have like a weird, I consider them both like kind of the same guy, even though they're clearly very different.
Well, I mean, Eric Mackey, you know, our very own Eric Mackey last year predicted that Russell Wilson would have a down year because he was getting married and was finally going to lose his virginity and would lose all that fire. So you got to wonder, I mean, will the breakup affect him on the field? Obviously, I'm joking. Please don't send me bad emails or tweets or give us a 2-star review because I'm wondering about the relationship status of Aaron Rodgers. But, yeah, I don't think there's anything else to talk about in terms of him. So,
To reference the Bill Simmons show, they have this saying about stickman, and I bet Aaron Rodgers is a premier stickman. Like, he keeps it just very discreet. Like, you don't even know who he's gotten down with. But, like, whenever he walks in a room, like, ladies just know, like, they need to be on their game.
All right. Let's talk about Ty Montgomery. I mean, he's obviously not, like, your prototypical running back. But he's got running back eligibility. He's going to catch a lot of balls. Where do you kind of have him in your ranks if you had done ranks?
He is a very interesting case because he, in PPR formats, first and foremost, I think that he brings a little bit more value to the table. But once they put Montgomery in the running back position, the team just kind of took off. They finally just gave Aaron Rodgers the keys and said, here you go. Like, let's go to the playoffs. And, Montgomery's part of that. He's going a bit high. He's going in front of Doug Martin, who I think will be a running back one this year once he comes back from suspension. You got Tevin Coleman and Dalvin Cook and Amir Abdullah around him that you could also use in PPR formats and probably are a bit safer, to be honest. But Montgomery is on one of the best, if not the best, offense in fantasy football. And if you're going to give him even 12 touches a game, I think that that's going to be mighty resourceful for you. But he does have a ton of injury pass problems. It's hard. It's back and forth. So if you're in a shallow format, I'm willing to go Montgomery because I do think that the upside is sky high, especially in PPR. If you're in a deeper format, then I think it's, kind of touch and go. You can go with him if you feel like it just that strong that he's going to fulfill, any type of real expectations to be a running back two every week. But I do have a little bit of skepticism based on the fact that they drafted Jamal Williams. He's a very solid, running back in himself, and Montgomery just hasn't been playing the position that long. So there's a lot of risk, but there's also a high amount of reward.
Yeah, I think I'm willing to take the kind of the risk and reward in PPR. In standard, I think I'm just going to stay clear. It just, to me, seems like, he's not going to be able to run in between the tackles very often, and this is a team that I think needs to run more between the tackles. And I really like Jamal Williams because I think he is the kind of the every down power back that this team needs and wanted from Eddie Lacy and couldn't get him because he wouldn't lay off the donuts. for me, I would be very, very interested in Jamal Williams as kind of a late round flyer in 14, 16 team leagues. Montgomery, I think, will get plenty of catches out of the backfield. I don't know about you. Do you think they want to see Aaron Rodgers dropping back like 80% of the time? I don't.
I don't either, and I think that that was part of the reason they drafted Williams is to become a little bit more conventional in some ways because Montgomery was just – he's not a great blocker. He's very tiny in terms of his frame. There's not a lot that you can do conventional with Montgomery. You just kind of have to use a spread-type scheme. But, yeah, I think that this is going to be a situation where – and you talked about Williams being a late flyer. People are on board Williams.
I haven't checked his ADP.
It's not even about his ADP, just in the drafts that I've done, including that one the other night. Like, people are drafting him in the – not the late rounds, but usually somewhere in, like, the 12th, 13th round, somewhere in there. And that's in 12-team format. So he's not being overlooked. It would be one thing if it was, like, you could just take him in the last round, take Ty Montgomery, and then take Jamal Williams the last round. But in 10-team leagues, you could probably do that. But in most 12- to 14-team leagues, you're going to have to pay a little bit more.
Yeah, he's currently going 152nd overall, according to Fantasy Pros, in the Terrence West, Jeremy Hill, Thomas Rawls area. And I think I would want him over West, but other than that, I don't even know how I feel yet about the Cincinnati backfield, but I would definitely take Rawls.
Running back is really, really bad this year. I mean, people are just taking running backs as soon as they possibly can. If I look through the data,
and I think you should. I agree.
But and to do the opposite approach, which I know a lot of people are going to try and be really like sneaky and say, "Oh, do the opposite." I think that it will work one in every 10 drafts that people will do that in because there's so many receivers later that going wide receiver first is just, unless it's Antonio Brown or Julio or Mike Evans, you're really putting yourself at a disadvantage based on the running backs that are available early and the running backs that are just not available late.
Yeah, and I mean, you and I will probably do a running back kind of position preview here in the next week or two. To your point, it's after you get past – I don't know. It depends on how you feel about Jay Ajayi or not. But after you get past like the top 7 or 8 running backs, it's really scary, I think. I'm a Todd Gurley believer and a backer, and I think he's going way too late. But, I mean, how confident are you guys like Lamar Miller? I mean, the reports out of San Francisco have that the new coaching staff does not like Carlos Hyde for some reason. You know, are you going to believe in Isaiah Crowell? You know, are you buying the Christian McCaffrey hype? I mean, like, there's a lot of kind of what ifs after you get past like the top 8 to 10 running backs, and so it becomes really, really interesting. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why Ty Montgomery is going as high as he is, because even though he's not your prototypical running back, you know he's going to get a lot of work one way or another.
Yes.
Let's talk about the wide receiver core a little bit, though. I mean, I don't necessarily know that there is a ton to talk about. Jordy Nelson, another guy going extremely high. I was in that magazine mock draft, and he went in the first round of a 14-team league. It was PPR, but are you on board with that kind of overall pick?
No, not really. Because I don't mind like the fact that you take him that early based on what he did last season, but there's no way that he continues the same usage, in my opinion, and the same touchdown percentage. Like he scored in every game last year, but 4 or 5, if I'm looking at it right. And I just don't believe that that's going to remain the same going into this year. It's just kind of the way Jordy is. He's been a consistent commodity, and I don't mind taking him early, but I just never do. Unless he's coming off one of those injury plagued years where I can get him in the 4th, 5th round, he's not the type of guy that I rely on in the first round. Not because he's inconsistent, not because he doesn't have the best quarterback in the league throwing to him, just because there's so many other options and it's a spread the wealth type offense that I just don't really feel confident in it. Last year was obviously amazing for him, but in my opinion, he's not going to have 14 touchdowns again. He always is injury risk, and I just, based on the running back position alone, I'm not willing to grab Jordy Nelson and, you know, forego shares of, you know, say Leonard Fournette, based on the fact that he's going to get a million carries at the beginning of the season and probably throughout the whole year. You know, even Michael Thomas, I think, is a superb option who's going a couple picks later. Jay Ajayi, like, I can't forego one of those running backs in exchange for Jordy Nelson.
I think I would be fine taking him on the wheel, because then you're, like, pairing him. So if you're like,
Why not just go Cooper though? Like, what's the difference?
I love Cooper, and I took Cooper in the first round on the wheel of that mock draft. So like, I'm higher than the consensus on Amari Cooper. I think he, to me, is a legit top five, top seven wide receiver this year. And I mean, someone, I think it was Donnie Miller, in our staff chat, posted a picture of what Amari Cooper's looking like right now, because he's been hitting the weights.
Yeah, just jacked. He looks like Maurice Jones-Drew.
He does.
Like, back when Maurice Jones-Drew wasn't a serious XM fantasy host and, like, you know, eating donuts every day himself.
Hey, don't talk bad about MJD. He could still bench press you.
Oh, he definitely could. He could probably bench press you and I together.
I don't know. Unfortunately, on my vacation, there was a scale in the bathroom, and I made the unfortunate mistake of stepping on it. So,
I had that on vacation.
Yeah, if any teams are looking for an offensive guard, I'm your man. I would pull the trigger on him if I knew I could like pair him with one of those running backs that you were talking about, but. To me, it is a pretty steep price to pay, and I think there are other guys that, you know, like Amari Cooper that you mentioned, that are going later than him that offer the similar upside. So I don't mind where he's going, but he's not necessarily a guy I'm targeting at the end of the first round.
Yeah, and I don't want it to sound like I'm down on him, because I'm certainly not. If he went 8th in the draft that I just did.
You owe him an apology for predicting his injury in 2015.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm sorry, Jordy. I do love you, because, I mean, if we're being completely honest, he's one of the best wide receivers ever, right? Like, top five, for sure? Ever?
I don't know about top five, but he's a pretty good one, I guess.
Like, I mean, not that matters, but just, like, in general, I've always loved Jordy. I've had an affinity for him, not because of him being white, but just because, like, he's amazing, and he's always
this conversation's getting really awkward really fast.
No, but I just don't want to sound like I'm down on him, because every time that, like, I say that I don't prefer a player where they're going. I have multiple people that are like, oh, why are you down on this guy? Why are you down on this guy? And I'm trying to like convey that I'm not really down on Jordy. I just don't prefer him where he's going.
Everybody tweet at Mike Warner, FWFB.
Please don't. I don't want to hear about Jordy. Please don't.
All right, let's talk about the other two guys, Devontae Adams or Randall Cobb. Who do you want?
Randall Cobb. I just have never – I'm done with Devontae Adams. And if that kills me for the rest of time, it kills me for the rest of time. I just can't do it. I just think that he is a – he's fine, and he obviously was a benefactor of Aaron Rodgers just being insane last year. And there's obviously an argument that he could do the same exact thing again this year. I just can't do the price at all. Like, he's going as a top 20-ish receiver, and I can't feel comfortable with that ever. I just won't. And as far as Cobb goes, we could easily see a year where he kind of regresses back to being targeted in the red zone again. Yes, there's multiple options on this team, and he could be forgotten once again. But, his draft cost is the best it's ever been. He's still a talented receiver. No, he's not going to ever be as good as he was the first couple years in the league, because slot receivers typically aren't that sustainable over the course of time, at least in touchdowns. But in PPR, I love Randall Cobb. He's going just outside of Cameron Meredith, and no, you won't ever get a wide receiver one out of him for multiple weeks this year, but he probably can produce one or two games where he's a top five receiver, and then the rest of the time be closer to a wide receiver two, especially in PPR. And you're getting him at the same price as somebody like Jeremy Maclin, Rashard Matthews, Corey Coleman's going around there, Eric Decker. I think that I'm willing to take a shot on a guy that's going to be playing on the best offense with the best quarterback and who has produced as a wide receiver one in the not so distant future or past.
All right, who'd you rather have, Cameron Meredith or Randall Cobb?
I would go Randall Cobb if I am in a deeper format, Cameron Meredith if I'm in a shallower looking for upside format.
Yeah, I'm with you on the Randall Cobb bandwagon. I think this is ridiculous as he's going as late as he is. I know last year was inconsistent. It was a little bit of a down year.
He was terrible. I mean, we're going to be honest. He was terrible, yes.
But, I mean, there's only one way to go up. There's only up to go with him. And, him going in the same area as Rashard Matthews and Jeremy Maclin and Meredith, to me, just seems a little bit crazy. I mean, he's currently going is he really going like 60 picks behind Corey Davis? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I mean, he's going outside about the top 40 receivers, which, I can look it up, but I bet he was like a top 50 guy last year. Even as bad as he was, he still was somewhat productive. I mean, maybe I have to look it up, but I don't know. I think that Cobb is just being taken way too late.
I'm with you. All right. The Packers have not had a productive tight end in a very long time. They signed Martellus Bennett. Is this the year they finally have a tight end worth taking in fantasy?
I love Martellus Bennett. He's one of my favorite players in football, maybe ever. Like, I just love the guy. I love his brother, too. It's just amazing. But no, I just...
Whoa, this, all right.
This is a trap every year. Jared Cook was the trap last year. Everybody was like, oh, Jared Cook, look at this.
But he might Jared be a Cook actual... isn't good. Like, that's the problem. And I hate to, like, cut you off, like, as you're, like, getting rolling, but... To me, like, this is the first time Aaron Rodgers has had a tight end worth having.
Disagree.
So, like, when was the last time he had an actual, like, reliable talent at tight end?
Well, he had JaMychal Finley, and Finley got it.
Keep going, because that doesn't – he's not a reliable talent.
That's true. Richard Rodgers?
No, that, just stop it. Like this is it. Like, I mean, this is the first time he, and he's in his prime. He's putting up the best numbers. The big issue with Bennett, and the reason I don't have him ranked higher than I already do, and I've got him at an 8 out of tight ends, is because of his injury past. Like, I just don't know if he's going to be able to stay on the field the whole year. But I bet you that Martellus Bennett is a top 5 end on game-to-game production. So, barring injury, I think he will be a top 5 guy.
And I just disagree. As much as I love him, I just can't do it. This history is rich of the tight end not producing in Green Bay. And based on where he's going among the top, 8 tight ends? Maybe 9, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, top 8 tight ends. So you're paying the price isn't exorbitant, a top 100 pick, 9th, 10th round, whatever it might be. But just based on, like last year, for instance, if you look at the red zone usage for Green Bay, their tight ends combined had the same amount of targets in the red zone as somebody as like Aaron Ripkowski. I can't feel comfortable with that. James Starks and Aaron Ripkowski together out targeted the tight ends by a pretty wide margin. And but then like, you also receivers.
You know, you have to remember though too, like you, if you've got no one to throw to at the position, of course it's not going to score points. But he's now got someone to throw to.
Yeah, but he also has four or five other options to throw to in the wide receiver core and the and obviously a running back as well. I'm not sitting here saying that Martellus Bennett is going to be a bust or something like that. I just am not comfortable taking him as my starting every week tight end. Last year he wasn't even an elite tight end option. He was on the best team for tight ends in the whole entire league. I mean, New England is as good as it gets. I mean, I understand Gronk's there and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Would it shock you if Dwayne Allen put up the same exact season, same exact, literally, as Martellus Bennett last year? It wouldn't shock me, personally. With Bennett, he is a very good blocker. He's somebody that Green Bay is going to love because they can use him in the red zone, not to catch touchdown passes, but to block. They can use him the whole entire game to block. And that's from an NFL perspective, that's invaluable. And I think that's part of the reason that he went there. And that's part of their scheme. They've always used their tight ends to block a good amount. And I also agree with your point that they haven't had a premier option at the position to use offensively much because, yes, Richard Rodgers is pretty terrible. And I can't remember the guys before that. And Jared Cook is not good as well. And so Bennett, yes, he is the best option they've had at tight end probably ever. But at the same time, you can't ignore the history.
Yeah, I think you have to ignore the history, and that's my point. Because I think the history is flawed when you look at the talent they've had at the position. So I mean, in spite of the fact that he was the number two guy there when Gronk was healthy in New England, Bennett put up a top 10 fantasy season last year at tight end. So are we saying that he is going in a full time workload in really a more prolific passing offense than he was in last season, that he's going to put up worse numbers?
I think he'll put up the same numbers.
Okay.
Which will put him around where he's going now. The problem is from a week to week basis last year, he wasn't a tight end one. He had a lot of games that he absolutely crushed you. I mean, if you're going through his game logs, he had a 1 for 5, a 4 for 35, a 1 for 14, a 3 for 22, a 2 for 4. Why is that? Because he's a great blocker, and game script wise and game scheme wise, they didn't need to use him in that role. With Green Bay, how many game scripts are they going to be in where they're just trouncing teams and they can just lay off the pedal a little bit? Like, at the same time, I'm not down on Bennett. It's really hard for me to envision that. And also, he had 7 touchdowns last year. 3 of those came in the last 4 games. If he doesn't hit those 7 touchdowns, you're looking at a completely different player.
I mean, here's a little bit of the difference, though, in terms of when we're talking about Green Bay versus New England. New England's defense was so good, especially comparatively speaking to Green Bay's, that, you know, those games in which New England scored points, the defense wasn't giving up points.
True.
So, like, you didn't have, like, these, like, shootouts that you're going to have in Green Bay, because Green Bay's defense sucks balls.
It's definitely not good. And there's definitely something to be said for that as well. It's just tough. I agree that Bennett does present some upside. I'm just a little bit worried based on the history and based on the fact that Bennett, while he's good, he's never been like top 5 good. And the fact that he's going as like the 8th or 9th guy now, where's the real value there?
I know. I think that's fair. All right. Let's. Anything else to talk about on the Packers?
I will say the Packers start off with Seattle, and then they go to Atlanta. Then they have Cincinnati, and then Chicago in week 4. So Chicago is kind of the first time where they get just a free roll to really kind of steamroll somebody. So
that's a really good point. Let's move on to the Minnesota Vikings, the team I picked to win the Super Bowl in coming into last season.
Are you picking them again this year?
No. I only make mistakes once, except for with Kendall Wright and Brian Quick.
Brian Quick. Oh, Brian Quick.
We didn't even mention him on the NFC East pod, and he's on my team.
Yeah, I hope that he makes the squad, though. Really,
I don't think he will. I honestly don't think. I mean, they really like Ryan Grant for some reason.
Well, he's not bad. I don't mind Ryan Grant.
No, I like Ryan Grant too. But I mean, he's buried on the depth chart at some point. Just you know, give them a chance to go play somewhere else. Minnesota Vikings, who's the quarterback there week three?
Week three, unfortunately, it's Sam Bradford, unless something devastating happens to him, which isn't out of the question. The offensive line for Minnesota, we have been on record multiple times saying is abysmal. Probably bottom three, if not the worst in football. Pretty close. Anyway, Bradford will be the guy until something happens. But in the meantime, Bridgewater has had a really good offseason, especially when you factor in that people just thought that he might not ever play again. Mm-hmm. So
vomited during that injury.
Yeah, watching it, like looking at the injury. Yes. If you read some of the stuff, it's kind of horrific. I mean, you have guys that are full grown, like 350-pound men talking about throwing up and just being disgusted. So, I mean, you can only imagine if you actually saw it yourself what it looked like and why people were saying that this might be the end of Bridgewater's career. But at least thus far, it hasn't been. He is looking like he might get his cast removed sometime soon, which is awesome. But at the end of the day, we can't really count on Bridgewater coming back this year until he takes reps behind center and there's a defense coming at him and he is going through that same motion that he did throughout his whole entire career prior to getting injured. You can't really count on him. So in the meantime, Bradford will be the guy. And what was the Vikings offense under Bradford? A very quick twitch, just very fast, get the ball out of the hands type of offense. An offense that really can't sustain a in-between-the-tackles running game. Even Jerick McKinnon, as great as he is outside of the hash marks, he's really not good or suited for inside the tackles. Latavius Murray, I mean, we'll go through all this stuff, but Sam Bradford, to me, is not a quarterback option because he's, A, got a terrible deep ball, B, he's under one of the worst, if not the worst, offensive lines in the league, and the yardage just won't be there.
All right, I got to correct one thing that you did say is you said he's getting his needs to get his cast off. He's actually already playing without a knee brace.
Oh, really? Okay. The last I saw, his knee brace was coming off, so that's awesome that it's already off.
Yeah, so, or at least the last I saw, they did put him on the PUP list for training camp, but, I mean, people start to freak out when they hear that, but, like, the PUP list is not, the training camp PUP list is not the same as the regular season PUP list. So, like, he's not missing the first six games of the season. He can come off the PUP list whenever he wants. It's just a designation for training camp, or in preseason. It's not a big deal at all. I don't know what to make of this, and I don't.
Are you thinking about Bradford? Like, what are you doing right now? Are you thinking about taking Bradford?
No, I don't want anything to do with either of these guys. Honestly.
No, Bridgewater. Bridgewater is was the type of guy that.
And
could
I
have
loved
done...
Bridgewater last coming into last
yeah.
year.
Yeah, I will always cite my bet with one of my good buddies about Bridgewater and Bortles during draft night. I threw down a handsome sum about on Teddy Bridgewater versus Blake Bortles, and we did a 5-year run. So whoever statistically is better over 5 years. I still don't feel like I'm completely out of it, but
you are. It's over.
It's not looking good.
You're missing a whole season. So
it may be more, honestly. But the thing about Bridgewater is he was the type of guy that could have really emerged last season. It's really unfortunate what happened with him, but he wouldn't have emerged to be like a top six or seven quarterback option. He could have emerged like Winston did, which was more of like a top 10 to 12 option, which I would have been completely fine with because Bridgewater is that good and he's better on his feet, to be honest with you.
Is a huge part of his game and the reason why I'm not like if I knew that he was 100% healthy and there was no ill effects from the knee injury, I would actually be like, he would be a target of mine in two QB leagues. He'd be like my third quarterback and I'd be grabbing him really, really cheaply because he's going really, really cheaply. But he's so reliant on his ability to move around the pocket and then take off when the pressure gets to him that I just don't think you can invest in him outside of just very deep two quarterback leagues.
Yeah, and that's the unfortunate part. I think when it's all said and done, Bridgewater will come back, and all I can do is pray that he is not even the same guy he was before, but that he can make at least a career out of being a backup or a fringe starter for a team or two, whatever it might be. I don't think that he's going to be long for the Vikings. Eventually, he might end up going somewhere else or probably will go somewhere else, but regardless, I wish him well, and I hope that he gets better.
All right. We were talking earlier about the Chicago Bears quarterback situation with Trubisky and Glennon, because they sign Glennon to the long term deal, give him a bunch of money, and then draft a guy in the first round. Well, the Minnesota Vikings do virtually the exact same thing at the running back position. They sign Latavius Murray, and then they go out and draft Dalvin Cook. So who's the guy to own?
I think we already know the answer for me. It's Dalvin Cook. And once again, I said this a couple of shows ago. I'll say it now. I love him overall as a player. I'm a firm FSU fan, and I've watched him pretty much every game of his collegiate career. He's a competitor. He is a grinder. He can take a full load, no pun intended. But he's really
that's
good
at not
he
a
does.
Pun.
Is that not a pun?
No, that's not a pun.
Whatever.
That's just an awful joke.
It is an awful joke. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can run in between the tackles. He's electric. Despite his combine, I think that he is a running back one in the making. The con to all of this is where he's going in drafts. He's going, was it outside the top 20 running backs right now, which is really hard to do or pull the trigger on based on the fact that he has another running back that was signed to the team just earlier this season. He also is a rookie, and you don't know what exactly Minnesota's going to do with him as a rookie. So there's a lot of risk there, you know, taking him that early. But he does have the capability to get – if Murray just kind of flames out or he's injured or whatever happens here, McKinnon is going to take a major backseat role. And even if he is kind of the secondary option because Murray is out, Cook is going to get 25-plus touches a game, in my opinion. They're going to use him any way they could, and they're going to give him a workhorse type of load. I keep on saying that, but either way, I think that Cook is going to be at least a firm running back two option this year. Murray is going at a much better price, and I will admit that he is probably the better draft bargain based on where he's going, but talent-wise, I used to love Latavius Murray, or Leviticus, whichever way you want to pronounce it, Justin, but I just can't. What he did last year was so underwhelming to me, and the fact that he's already coming into this season with an injury just really downgrades my thoughts on him. I would rather go with Derrick Henry, who's going a couple spots higher. Jonathan Stewart is going underneath him, which I think is insane. You also have Samaje Perine, who I love this year. Duke Johnson I love. So there's just multiple options around Murray that while he pretty much presents a pretty decent draft cost, it's not worth it because Cook is a much bigger threat to his playing time than some of these other guys. So I'm going with Cook. I don't feel amazing about either just because the offensive line is so putrid there that there's probably not going to be room for either, to be honest with you. Like the best case scenario for one of these running backs is Cook getting anywhere from 5 to 6 receptions a game and turning it into 60, 70 yards, maybe a touchdown, just because they need to do their quick hit offense continually just to mask their total ineptitude on their offensive line. But other than that, it's going to be probably a tough road this year.
Now I don't want to say they're necessarily different, but they're not the same player. But you know what this reminds me of? It's a player we talked about earlier in this episode, Jordan Howard. When last year, yeah, Jordan Howard was the man nobody was paying attention to early on, and by midseason, this guy was a top tier running back. I think, and not to say that people are sleeping on Dalvin Cook, because they're not, like you mentioned. He's being taken very high. But I think the trajectory of this season will start that way, where he is not going to perform early on. But at some point, he is going to take over and become the guy there in Minnesota. So here's my thing, is I'm not willing to pay the price, because you're going to spend probably the first 4 to 5, 6 weeks of the season dealing with a very inconsistent workload with a guy who's probably splitting carries, learning an offensive system, like you mentioned, not a good offensive line. But I think he is one of those guys to target around your trade deadline, you know, because sure, I don't think he'll have broken out probably within the first 4 weeks of the season. That's when you try to go and get him. But I'm not paying a top 25 running back price for Dalvin Cook. That's insane. LeGarrette Blount going after him. Guy you like, Ameer Abdullah going after him.
Like Gillisley.
Yeah, I was just about to mention him. A guy we both like in Gillisley. I like Derrick Henry. I like Paul Perkins. You know, I just can't imagine spending the price tag on Dalvin Cook right now. he will be a guy I go after at some point, but during draft season's a little bit too early for me.
Yeah, and Minnesota, what you're saying is pretty perfect. When you look at like week 8, he has Cleveland, and then there's a bye week. Then they have Washington, the LA Rams, Detroit, Atlanta. That's a really nice little stretch there in the middle of the season that you might be able to capitalize. They also get Green Bay in week 16, usually the last week for playoffs. That's also a pretty nice incentive as well. The schedule doesn't look too hard for Minnesota in terms of fantasy. I mean, difficulty-wise in regular season NFL, it might be sort of difficult here for them. But for fantasy, I'm not too scared. You don't see Seattle's on there, and you don't see some of these other juggernaut defenses that could really crush them. So that's a pretty good sign in itself.
Yep. Wide receiver core in Green Bay is... in Minnesota, is interesting. You went out and got Stephon Diggs, right, in our Dynasty League. So
yes.
Tell me what you like about him this year.
His target share is insane, and I think that he's going to continue to be targeted the same amount going into this year. He was slept on last season as a commodity, and when you look at what he might do coming into this year, I mean, he had four games in a matter of eight weeks. Yeah, four games in a matter of 8 weeks where he had double-digit targets. That's amazing. And then you look at the way he finished, yeah, that's pretty mediocre, and you're not really excited about that. But based on where he's going, I'm willing to take the shot every single day of the week. He's going outside the top 25 wide receivers, which in PPR is an absolute catastrophe. I don't know how that happens. But at least for this year, going outside the top 70 picks, sixth, seventh rounder, I have no problem, especially in PPR, taking him as my wide receiver two. I think that he's going to probably be looked at more as a wide receiver three. The drafts I'm doing, people aren't really going goo-goo gaga for Stephon Diggs. And admittedly, Crowder, who I obviously we've mentioned multiple times forever that we love, is going around him. So I understand if I went Crowder or somebody else goes Crowder above Diggs, I'm not really going to hate you for it. But just based on where he's going, the target share alone is just well worth the price, in my opinion. And no, I don't love this Minnesota offense. I think that they're going to try or attempt at least to be balanced. But at the end of the day, they're going to have to revert back to this really quick hitting, high target share scheme for Stephon Diggs and kind of fuel their offense through him. Adam Thielen, you didn't ask me about Thielen, but I'm intrigued by him. I think that he is a lower tier option, maybe a wide receiver 3-4 in my opinion. I'm not really fully on board with him, but I am tantalized by him. I think that he's a very interesting guy that kind of snuck up last year on me a little bit. I just kind of threw him away and didn't really look into him much, but after looking into him, he's a little bit more intriguing than I would have thought initially. But Laquon Treadwell is my dude. I love Laquon. I think that he is at some point in his career going to be a wide receiver one or two, somewhere in that region. That's the talent that he possesses. People are probably forgetting that based on his pretty much full ineptitude last season. But based on where he's going right now, I think that he was drafted to be a red zone weapon for them. I think that he is going to hurt Kyle Rudolph's value for this year. Kyle Rudolph is going too high as well, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I love Laquon Treadwell. I think that he is the best draft bargain of the group, but I'm most likely to draft Stephon Diggs as well.
Yeah, no one is more down on Stephon Diggs in our staff ranks as I am.
Wow. And why is that?
I didn't like the inconsistency at the end of the year. And I mean, I was huge on Stephon Diggs when he came out of college. I watched him play a lot in Maryland. I really hate the offensive situation in terms of what his value is going to be this year. I think this is a team that is going to try to rely on their defense and running the ball. So I think he's going to lose targets. The emergence of Thielen, the projected emergence of Laquon Treadwell, Rudolph's value.
Signing of Michael Floyd.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's just too much there to say that he's going to get the same target share as he did last year.
He doesn't need to, though, based on where he's going. That's
and I agree. And so, I mean, I don't hate necessarily where he's going, but I'm just not. No, I do. I hate where he's going. He's going right now as the 28th wide receiver off the board, ahead of our boy Jamison Crowder, ahead of your boy Brandon Marshall, ahead of my.
He's not my boy. Let's be clear. He's not my boy. I'm not going out. I'll live to draft him everywhere.
I mean, ahead of my boy Pierre Garçon. I just can't. I'm not going to do it. I just don't buy that he is in a prolific enough offense to support all those pieces, something's got to give. And I think part of it is going to be Stephon Diggs taking a step back.
You got to calm down, Pierre Garçon. My God, this is getting way overblown.
All right. I got board bet. Yeah, Pierre Garçon versus Stephon Diggs.
Definitely Stephon Diggs every day of the week.
All right.
Besides this, though, I got Diggs at the beginning of the sixth round in the draft that we just did, which was about 60th overall, a little bit higher than where he's going in, you know, on average between, you know, the fantasy football calculator and ESPN. But wide receiver wise, it was about the same. And this was a PPR format, so that's not the automatic.
Was Crowder still on the board?
No, he wasn't. He was taken about two rounds earlier, which is kind of my fear with Crowder. Crowder, as much as you and I both love him, which I think we've said probably 10 times on this podcast, we should probably have some type of dinger that goes off whenever that's said. James and Crowder, we love him. It's really hard because he went at the beginning of the fifth round in this format, which is almost a full round higher. And based on just looking at ADPs, you would assume that he's more of a discount, which is not the case. And Cameron Meredith went ahead of Diggs as well. It's really hard to gauge. I think that Diggs is going to end up falling a bit. Once we get into big full on draft season, I think that we'll see Diggs go down a little bit in stock. And some of these other running backs that are in the mid tier, like Paul Perkins, Mike Gillisley, guys like that, Eddie Lacy, I think we'll see them start to rise once people kind of find out that the running back core in this league is just not really apparent.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about in terms of Minnesota?
Kyle Rudolph, I'm happy that he did what he did last season. I'm not expecting the same touchdown percentage as well, but at the same time, he's still going as a very economical option, you know, about pick 90. I would rather go Hunter Henry.
Me too.
I think that Henry, what's that?
I said me too.
Yeah, Henry showed me you could make an argument that he had one of the better rookie seasons as a tight end that we've seen in a long, long time, maybe since Gronk, to be honest with you. And even Gronk wasn't that great his rookie year. But I love Henry and what I saw from him. I think he is the one guy, if you're going around this area, somewhere in the 67 where Delanie Walker's going, all the way like pick 120-something, he's the one tight end of the Delanie Walkers, Martellus Bennett, Kyle Rudolph, Zach Ertz, O.J. Howards. He's the one that could be a top five option, in my opinion. And I think Henry's a better route than Kyle Rudolph. Not to knock Rudolph, but he's never been somebody that you can count on week to week. He's also not elusive. He's not an athletic guy. He's just massive. He's a massive tight red zone option for this team. I think it will continue that way, but I just think that there's going to be some regression in the touchdowns, and we will probably see him finish outside the top eight or nine, probably somewhere in the 11 to 12 range.
I mean, I'm a huge Hunter Henry fan, and, you know, I'll probably do a bold predictions piece this year, and if I do, Hunter Henry being a top five tight end will be one of those. And now I'm wondering, after what you said, whether that's even bold enough. You know, the kind of conflicting reports, I haven't seen any updates since on Mike Williams.
He looks like it's not as severe as people thought initially.
So when they originally said that he may need season-ending surgery, I was like, oh, really start, you know, this is going to really start kind of starting the Hunter Henry bandwagon. We'll talk more about him when we talk about the AFC West next week. But I'm a big Hunter Henry fan. In terms of Rudolph, I'm with you. I think he's overrated. I don't think he's going to be as consistent as he was last year. I think last year we suffered from just a really, really subpar tight end position. I think this year it's a little bit deeper than it was last season with some of the rookie additions, some people back healthy and things like that. So I think people are still kind of projecting him to at least do what he did last year, and I'm not willing to be on that bandwagon. I currently have him as my 11th tight end, 11th or 10th or 11th, I think 11th. He's in the conversation for a tight end one, but I could easily drop him below like a Jack Doyle or, that huge grouping of guys, the Zach Millers, the Austin Hoopers, the, you know, Eric Ebron. I mean, he's part of that kind of hodgepodge of guys that I don't really want to be playing with anyways.
Yeah. He's also gone two straight years without getting injured. And if you know anything about Rudolph, whenever he has a pretty solid season, or at least when he did back in 2013, getting those 9 touchdowns, he went back-to-back years just being terrible in terms of production. So he ended up kind of rebounding in 2015 and 2016. That's awesome, but he also is a massive injury risk as well. So that's unfortunate, but that's just the way of the world.
Tight ends with concussion issues.
Yeah, not really great. I do want to ask you about Michael Floyd. I mentioned him earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to take a shot late in deep, deep format. So 12-team, maybe even 14-teamers. I'm not really looking at it, but like I play in one 16-team league every year. It's a PPR format. I still love Floyd. I probably always will, despite his amazingly terrible video that he had. I can't really ever quit him. I don't know if you're interested in any way.
I'm interested in the talent. He was, what, suspended for
4 games. He's going to be out the first 4 games this year. Yes.
You know, here's the thing. I've been very honest about my issues with addiction, and you know, I've been so clean and sober a very long time. I work in I'm a professional drug and alcohol counselor. I'm a certified addiction specialist as well. And so I root for guys who've got problems with addiction. You know, I was a big Josh Gordon fan and proponent. I still am. I hope that he gets another shot to get back in the NFL. But you can't necessarily bet on these guys because the majority of them aren't going to make it. And there were reports that prior to his suspension or the news of his suspension becoming official, that people saw him out at bars.
Oh, yikes.
So, that's not a good sign.
No, it's not a good sign at all.
And, you know, as a person, I wish him all the best of the luck in the world. In extremely deep league, I'd be willing to take a shot. Like, you know, like in our 16-team Dynasty League, you know, that's got, I want to say, like 30-man rosters or something like that. I wouldn't mind, you know, rostering him and just on the off chance that he can do something, especially if you can put him into some sort of IR slot or reserve slot while he's on suspension. But you cannot, you know, he's a lottery ticket. He's like one of those 7th-round pick guys at this point coming out of the draft. Or the rookie draft is what I'm talking about. Like that, you go, I don't really know who this guy is, but hey, who knows? You know, if blah 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 and blah 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 gets hurt, he might have a shot. So, you know, like I said, wish him best luck in the world. I hope he finds what he's looking for, inside and outside of and most importantly, outside of the NFL. He's definitely not a guy that I will be targeting virtually in any format.
Isn't that a U2 song? Still haven't found what I'm looking for.
No idea.
Something like that.
I don't even know. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I don't listen to YouTube, Mike. I am not a cool person.
I don't
person.
Listen to YouTube either, but you're ridiculous if you don't know that song.
I have no idea what you're talking about, dude.
Yeah, you do. Whatever.
That's going to wrap us up for this episode. Mike, why don't you tell people what you're working on and where people could follow you?
I'm working on updating Justin in terms of pop culture and giving him just a little bit more clarity on things in life other than just fantasy sports and addiction specialist stuff. Anyways, you can catch me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. I will continue writing for Fantasy Pros this year in terms of updates and such, so check that out there. For baseball, I write for baseballhq.com. I also do multiple baseball podcasts when I have time and I'm not working and killing myself. Other than that, check out anything else I write on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. And I got a bunch of swag still. I got a few mugs, some t-shirts. Some are available for purchase, and some are available for free if you give us a 5-star review. So check that out, too.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read all my baseball stuff over on FanGraphs and some of it on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Exclusively writing for football on friendswithfantasybenefits.com until someone pays me to write somewhere else. and then you can hear me on this podcast probably about 2 to 3 days a week, depending on how many other guys and what their schedule are. You can hear me on the baseball podcast 3 days a week. You can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Thursdays from, oh God, it's 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that's 6 to 8 Pacific. So definitely check that out. And you can get that on iTunes now too. So I know a lot of people have been asking me, hey, like if I can't listen that late, where can I go? You can get the Tout Wars Hour on iTunes. Me and Laura Michaels talking football, baseball, A little bit of basketball. I got Paul Spohr coming on, or our very own Matt Thompson coming on this week. So definitely check that all out. All right, that's going to wrap us up. For Mike and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic football season.